something else about me, another way for him to try finding common ground with me, like we're the same.
Is the charm bothering you?
He asks gently. It's fine, I reply quickly. It's like it's not even there.
The irritation should pass in a day or so.
He pauses, his hand on his chin in reflection.
I know it hurts now, Ella, but in time you will come to appreciate the lessons you are learning. You will thank me for my benevolence.
I frown at him, sure that he's going to ramble no matter what I say, so I don't say anything at all. I glare up at him.
So what? You're, like, protecting me with this thing? Is that the point? I would see no harm come to you, child,
Cedric Azra replies. Does this charm work like the one the guard had? I take a step towards him and the doorway. If I run out of here and one of your minions tries to stop me, will anything he does to hurt me be reflected back at him?
No. Our charm does not work like that,
Cedric Azra answers patiently.
And I would stop you, granddaughter. Not one of my minions.
I take another step towards him, wondering if he'll back away. He doesn't. If I get too close, will the charm break? Cedric Azra doesn't move.
Just as each charm works differently, so does each one have a unique weakness. If only I discovered that bringing the guard together would have broken the Elder's craven charm sooner, I would have already obliterated the guard.
He touches the three glowing Loric pendants dangling from around his neck.
Although, I must admit, I have enjoyed the hunt.
I try my best to sound casual and sincere. Shouldn't I know what that weakness is? I don't want to accidentally go breaking our connection, Grandfather. Cedric Azra actually grins at me. I'm beginning to realize that he appreciates it when I'm duplicitous. Then, his eyes drift towards the shredded pages of his book, and his grin falters.
Perhaps soon, when you are ready, when you trust the purity of my motives,
he replies. Then abruptly changes the subject.
Tell me, granddaughter, besides the Eternus, what other legacies have you developed?
Only whatever I used to hurt you at Dulcie Base, I lie, figuring it's a good idea to keep my telepathy a secret. I've tried using it to reach out to the guard, but the distance from the Anubis to Earth must be too great. Once we land, I'll try again. Until then, the less Cedric Azra knows about me, the better. And I can't control that one. I don't even know what it is.
I was hardly hurt,
Cedric Azra scoffs.
Your other legacies will develop soon, dear. In the meantime, would you like me to show you the extent of your power?
Yes, I reply, almost surprised at my own eagerness. I tell myself that it's smart to learn how to use my legacies, even if my teacher is the biggest monster in the universe. In response, Cedric Azra smiles, almost like he thinks he's gotten through to me. He hasn't, but let him go on thinking that I'm becoming an eager pupil. He waves his hand at the mess I've made of his book.
First, clean this up,
he commands.
I will see you have a chance to practice your legacies once your betrothed arrives.
My what?
Chapter 11. Sunset in the Everglades would be pretty, if not for the massive Mogadorian warship blotting out the horizon. Whatever alien metal the warship is made from, it reflects nothing. The pink and orange light of the dying day simply absorbed into the hull. The behemoth doesn't land. There's not enough cleared space in the swampland for it to set down, unless it wants to crush the smaller Mogadorian ships parked on the narrow runway below. Instead, the warship hovers, metal gangways unfurling from the ship's underside and connecting to the ground. Mogadorians scurry up and down the ramps, loading equipment into the ship. "We should wipe them out," Marina says matter-of-factly. Nine blinks at her. "Are you serious? I count at least 100 Mogs and the biggest goddamn ship I've ever seen." "So what?" Marina counters. "Don't you love to fight?" "Fights I can win, yeah," Nine replies. "And if you can't win, you just run your mouth, right?"
"Enough," I hiss before Nine can say anything more.
I don't know how long Marina's going to hold this grudge against Nine, or what it'll take to ease the tension, but now is definitely not the time to deal with it.
Bickering isn't getting us anywhere.
We're on our stomachs in the mud, shielded from the busy Mogadorians by overgrown tall grass, right at the edge of where the swamp begins to encroach on the man-made clearing. There are two buildings in front of us. One is a glass-and-steel one-story that looks almost like a greenhouse, and the other is an aircraft hangar with a narrow landing strip, perfect for small propeller planes or the saucer-shaped Mogadorian crafts, nowhere near large enough for the warship floating above us. Just like Dale told us before he fled, the whole place looks like it was abandoned until recently. The swamp is beginning to creep back in and crack the asphalt. The metal struts of the greenhouse are rusted over, and the NASA logo has almost completely faded from the side of the hangar. Of course, these conditions don't appear to have deterred the Moogs from setting up a small base here. But now, it looks like they're packing up.
"Marina, do you sense anything?" I ask.
At this point, we've got nothing else to go on except this intuition of hers. It's gotten us this far, right into a swarming nest of Mogadorians. Might as well let it take us a little further.
"He's here," she says. "I don't know how I know, but he's here."
"Then we're going in," I say. "But we're doing it the smart way." I reach out and grab both of their hands, turning the three of us invisible. If a Mogadorian was to look over here now, we'd be nothing more than three strange indentations in the mud. As a group, we stand up, confident that the horde of Mogs won't be able to see us.
"Marina, you lead the way," I whisper.
As we step out of the swamp, Nine trips over a root and nearly topples over, our chain almost breaking. That would have been the shortest covert mission in history. I squeeze his hand hard.
"Sorry," he says quietly. "It's just weird not being able to see my legs."
"That can't happen again," I warn him. "I'm reconsidering that whole rushing in and killing them all thing," Nine replies. "Being sneaky isn't exactly my strong suit." Marina makes an annoyed noise, so I squeeze her hand hard, too.
"We need to move as a unit," I say through gritted teeth, hoping we can regain some of that instinctual teamwork we managed during the earlier fight with Moog scouts.
"Take it slow, be quiet, and don't bump into anything." With that, we start slowly forward. I'm not too worried about the noise our footfalls make on the uneven pavement. The Mogadorians are busy loading heavy gear from the greenhouse to the warship, the wheels on their dollies squeaking and grinding. I'm used to moving around while invisible, trusting my instincts, but I know that it can be hard for the others. We approach slowly, grasping onto each other, keeping as quiet as possible. Marina takes us towards the greenhouse first. The Moogs are concentrated around that area, wheeling out carts loaded up with bizarre, mad scientist-looking devices. I watch as one Moog pushes a wheeled shelving unit cluttered with potted plants, flowers, patches of grass, saplings, all of them things found on Earth, and yet all of them veined with a strange gray fluid. They look droopy, on the verge of dying, and I wonder what kind of experiments the Moogs were running on them. There's a tall Mogadorian at the base of the ramp leading to the warship. His uniform is different from the usual warrior garb. Those Mogs are at least sort of trying to fit in on Earth, even if they're dressed like gothic weirdos. This guy is definitely some kind of military officer. His attire formal and severe, all black, covered in shining medals and studded epaulets. The tattoos across his scalp are much more elaborate than any I've seen. He holds a computer tablet in his hands, checking items off with a swipe of his finger as the Mogs load them onto the ship. He barks the occasional order at the others in harsh Mogadorian. Marina tries to move us closer to the greenhouse, but I tighten my grip and plant my feet. Nine bumps into my back, letting out an annoyed grunt that we've stopped. The path in front of us is like a Mogadorian obstacle course. They're everywhere. Any closer, and we run the risk of a stray Mog walking right into us. If Eight is in that greenhouse with their experiments and cargo, our only chance to get him would be a full-on assault. I'm not ready to go down that road yet. Sensing my reluctance, Marina's hand grows a little colder in mine. "Not yet," I hiss at her, my words barely louder than a soft breath. "We check the hangar first." We make it about 10 more steps before an animal groan stops us in our tracks. From the greenhouse, a team of Mogs wheel out a large cage. Inside is a creature that might have been a cow at one point, but has since been transformed into something seriously nasty. The animal's eyes are wet and jaundiced. Painful-looking horns jut out of its skull, and its udder is immensely swollen and covered in the same grayish veins I noticed on the plants. The creature looks lethargic and depressed, barely alive. Whatever experiments the Mogs were running down here are truly disgusting, and, like Nine, I'm starting to reconsider Marina's idea of just wiping out all these bastards. Massive warship or no massive warship. "Hold up," Nine whispers in my ear. "I've got an idea." Exposed as we are, I'm not sure it's a great time for one of Nine's crazy ideas. But a moment after he stops us, the cow beast in the cage groans again and lumbers awkwardly to its feet. It staggers to the side and pushes all its weight against one side of the cage, causing the Mogs pushing it to yell for assistance as the whole thing threatens to topple. Then, the monster mule kicks one of its cloven hooves at the bars, nearly smashing the face of a Mog. "I asked it to give us a distraction," Nine whispers, more Mogs closing in on the cage to try sedating their experiment. "Poor thing was happy to help." Nine's animal telepathy works like a charm. As if it's at last discovered a purpose in life, the cow thrashes about, bullying towards the sides of its cage, even catching one Mog in the shoulder with its horn. The chaos creates an opening for us to slip through the mass in front of the greenhouse and make our way towards the hangar. We all stop at the sound of a Mog blaster being fired. Turning around, I see the officer holstering his blaster, a smoking hole in the side of the cow's head. It slumps in the cage, unmoving. He yells some orders, and the Mogadorians begin loading the corpse onto the warship. As I tense up, Nine whispers to me, "Better this way." It was in a ton of pain. With some distance between us and the highest concentration of Mogs, I feel comfortable enough to whisper back, "What were they doing to it?" Nine pauses before answering. "I couldn't, like, have a heart-to-heart with the thing. But I think they were trying to figure out how they could make it more efficient. They're, experimenting with the ecology." "Demented," Marina mutters. We pick up some speed as we move towards the hangar. On our right, at the edge of the runway, are a trio of the smaller, saucer-shaped Mogadorian ships. A maintenance crew of 5 Mogadorians huddles around one of them, pulling circuit boards out of the ship's underbelly, and generally looking befuddled. I guess Mogadorians can have technical difficulties, too. Other than those guys, the coast is clear. The huge sheet metal doors of the hangar, wide enough for a small plane to pass in and out, are only open a few feet, just enough to let a person pass through. There are lights on inside the hangar, but all I can see through the gap is empty space. Marina slows down as we reach the doors, and then stops fully to peek inside. While she's doing that, I look over my shoulder. Nothing's changed. The Moogs are still loading materials onto the warship, completely unaware that we just snuck through their ranks.
Anything?
Nine whispers, and I can sense him craning his neck, trying to see through the crack in the hangar doors. Before I can answer, I hear Marina's breath catch in her throat. My hand stings, shot through with cold, like I'm suddenly clutching a block of ice.
Shit, Marina,
I hiss, but she's not listening. Instead, she's lunging through the doors. Considering my hand is numb, it takes all my willpower to keep hold of her. I tug Nine along behind me, and his shoulder strikes the steel door, his grunt covered by the echoing, metallic rattling. The hangar is almost completely empty, the Mogadorians having already cleared all their gear out. Large floodlights shine down from the rafters, illuminating the metal table and chair in the center of the room. They're the only things left in the hangar, and the lights from above cast long shadows across the concrete floor. Eight's body is on the table. He is wrapped in a black body bag, unzipped to the waist. He's shirtless, the quarter-sized wound where 5 stabbed him through the heart plainly visible on his chest. His brown skin is ashen, but 8 still looks very much like himself. Like at any moment he'll teleport off the table and play some annoying joke on me. There are black electrodes with short, fragile-looking antennae attached to 8's temples, and a few more running down his sternum. The electrodes generate some kind of field that's barely visible to the eye, like a low and steady current of electricity is passing over 8's body. I think it's something the Moogs attached to 8 to keep his body intact for their experiments. In addition to the electrodes, someone has cleaned the blood off him, and surprisingly, they've left his Loric pendant around his neck, the jewel shimmering dully against his chest. It kills me to see him like this, but 8 looks almost peaceful. Of course, 8 isn't the reason Marina shoved the hangar doors, or the reason that she's currently giving my hand a wicked case of frostbite. Seated next to 8, head in his hands, is 5. 5 sits crouched forward, almost like he wishes he could fold in on himself. There's a thick pad of gauze over the eye Marina stabbed back in the swamp, a very faint pink stain beginning to soak through. His good eye is red-rimmed. It looks as if he's been crying, or hasn't been sleeping, or both. 5's head is freshly shaven since we last saw him, and I wonder how far off he is from getting a set of his own Mogadorian tattoos. He's dressed in Mogadorian formal attire, similar to the officer directing traffic at the warship. However, his uniform is severely wrinkled, the buttons around the neck undone, everything looking a little too tight. There's no way the one-eyed traitor didn't hear us enter. Thanks to Marina, we made a ton of noise coming through the door, and the emptiness of the hangar amplifies everything to the point where I'm suddenly extremely conscious of my breathing. Even worse, I can hear a low growl coming from Marina, like she's fighting back an intense scream, ready to throw herself at Five.